We're good. We're good. Brady, you have an energy drink?
I guess. I didn't really probably want that on the table, but I got it because I'm kind of tired.
Yeah, mid-afternoon ones are a little different, huh?
You got they really are.
A little pick-me-up.
After a couple of meetings we had this morning, too?
Yeah.
And then...
For sure.
Jumping into this, yeah.
Yes. Dale, how you been?
Doing well, man.
I haven't seen you in a while.
Is that better? Oh. I don't know if you can hear me now. Oh, yeah. It's going to slide.
You'll have to probably move the arm in a little bit more. Yeah, because that'll probably keep rotating.
That we're good?
Yeah, we're good.
We're good there?
Yeah. Okay. Here, can I? I'll monkey with it. I don't want you to have to like sit there the whole time with it. Let me see if I can. Sometimes you work the angle here a little bit.
I was also just trying to like make it where it just kind of. Yeah. I didn't have to constantly move to it.
How's that? Yeah,
that works for me.
Better?
Yeah.
Nice job, Trev.
Thanks, Trev.
Yeah, on the fly while we're live.
I mess with this one enough to know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty funny. Is like if I ever watch a YouTube, you know, podcast that we do, right. I'm constantly just fidgeting just with like the thing. It's like, I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah,
I need one of those little fidget spinners.
Yeah.
That's what I need.
Yes, but we do have the man, the myth, the legend, Dale Evans here from Barnes Bullets. And I don't know your official title over there.
Yes.
Yeah, so, legend.
Legend. That's it. Man, the myth, the legend. I just said it.
His business card just says legend on it.
Right.
Yeah.
So as of December, I became the marketing manager for both Barnes and Sierra Bullets. So that's kind of something that a lot of people don't know, right? Is that we're actually kind of married at the hip.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm
marketing manager.
Marketing manager.
How do you market bullets?
Hopefully, make a lot of cool content and show how well they work on animals. Right?
Yeah,
because you probably get your hands slapped all the time on anything social media based.
Definitely can. It's funny, we've actually got it more slapped on the Sierra side,
really,
than the Barnes side for whatever reason. I'm sure Big Brother's like listening to this and be like, okay, we can change that right now, and now we're gonna get it slapped on the Barnes side instead.
Huh.
But yeah, for whatever reason, like the Sierra side. Like in early December, we just got like kanked off Facebook and it's just like been sitting there. We said it was going to be a 30-day thing and we still haven't got it back.
Really?
Yeah. But like Instagram's perfectly fine and rolling.
But today's a new day.
And it was the exact same post.
Today's a new day.
Exactly.
Inauguration was today. I think you got it back probably.
Yeah, hopefully so. I haven't even checked.
Yeah.
So I've been traveling all day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Give us what I don't know anything about bullets. I don't know why I'm here, actually, to be honest.
Hey, wait.
Comic relief. I did shoot an animal this year.
Shot a mule deer buck.
I did.
With a rifle.
That's true. And I did go to the rifle range and I shot some bullets down range.
That's probably good.
I'm not a complete novice, but yeah, I don't know anything. I don't know a whole lot. So okay. I'll try to serve as the complete novice portion of this podcast where I just ask random questions that probably a lot of you that listen and probably already know.
That's why you're here.
That's why Brady invited me.
Yeah.
Brady called me last night. I was at dinner and he's like, hey, coming down tomorrow? I said, I can. Yeah. He's like, I just need some like a real novice perspective to this podcast. So that's probably the role I'm going to serve today.
Okay. Perfect role for this.
Yeah. Do you want to hit promo first?
Yeah. Hit us with the promo. Okay. 3 minutes in, we're already doing promo.
Promo.
Not a lot of BS talk.
What's the date? So today is the 20th. Yep. What day? What's Thursday? When this goes out? The 23rd?
Gotcha. Oh, so one day left.
So, okay. Yep. So if you're hearing this today, which is going to be Thursday, the 23rd, you're going to have 1 day remaining in this special promo that we've got going on. Whereas if people sign up, so 4 people sign up under your account, you're going to get $1,000 back in the Go Hunt Gear Shop.
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah.
That was my reaction when I heard this promo. So
sweet.
You get 4 people to sign up that are not insiders. Get them to sign up under their own account. You're going to get $1,000. And all you got to do is get them signed up. And then you're going to use your email, right?
Your email,
when you sign up. So that's the current promo we got going on. Pretty sick deal. Because then you and your buddies will all have your Go Hunt Insider platform. You'll all have Go Hunt maps.
Yep.
You can do all the map work, share waypoints and all that. And then, someone's going to get $1,000 in the gear shop.
Pretty cool. So you should run around and get 4 people when you're at SHOT Show this week.
Yeah, that should be pretty easy, right?
Yeah, you can deal with a lot of people. Like, right. Hey, you want $75? I get $75.
Just like, hey, scan this QR code real quick, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, you can wheel and deal for us.
Then you could talk somebody into exchanging your Go Hunt gear dollars for poker chips. Then you could go to the casinos and turn it into $5,000.
That's a great idea.
Double down on black.
Then again, the... promo ends by time shot show.
That's
end.
True.
Yeah. So there's this weird workaround.
Yeah.
So you're here for I just have to come back.
Yeah. You're here for SHOT?
I am here for SHOT Show.
Do you love SHOT Show?
It's a show. It's I mean, obviously it's a huge show, right? It's one of our bigger shows. You know, all industry type of people. It's exciting to normally launch, quote, new products and everything. Mm-hmm. We're doing something kind of off cycle this year. We're not going to be launching new products until later this year.
Heard that here first.
Is that a calculated decision by the marketing manager?
Maybe not by the marketing manager, but throughout the marketing department for sure.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so we are going to be launching new products, but it's going to come a little bit later in the year.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, SHOT's great for connecting with a lot of industry people, right? Mm. We'll be talking about our new products, but not just to the public yet.
Right. So you'll be releasing kind of some details at the show. Yeah.
Think about like a very, very soft launch to industry folks.
Is this stuff you're excited about?
I am very excited about it.
That was pretty confident.
Yeah.
You did say that really confidently.
Yeah, very confident. I was trying to gauge his reaction.
I was able to use it this past year, right? On a few different animals and, had really damn good success. So I think that our excitement at Barnes and Sierra, for both of the different products that we are launching is a lot of excitement. And I think that people that have been able to test it as well, are pretty excited about it. So I think it's going to be very different for our brands, which is good.
Should we just pause for a few minutes of the podcast and see what we can come up with?
I have so many questions from that. One time I talked to you on the phone, you said you hinted you were somewhere and you couldn't really say where you were at. And then afterwards, all of a sudden, I was successful in that hunt. And I was
by the way.
Yeah. So now my wheels are turning. Like, ooh, what did he?
I think that happened like 2 hours after we chatted.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Huh.
You did a good job of pitching that. Just kind of leaving it hanging, left some.
I mean, you just have to be cognizant of our social media and everything else, as long as Big Brother doesn't kick us off, right?
And be
looking for it.
Is SHOT still at the Sands? Is that where that's? Is
it's kind of like big the Venetian, convention center, the Caesars. Yeah, it's
right over there by the new Sphere. Mm-hmm. Right out the window.
Yeah,
it's huge. I'll be stopping by Wednesday.
You should probably come tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, at least for a little bit.
Why tomorrow?
I mean, just
you might want to come tomorrow. It sounds like you're going tomorrow.
Sounds like maybe he'll show me something tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, could be.
That's what it
maybe
sounds
like.
Maybe
he won't show me on a Wednesday, but he'll show me it tomorrow.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. How many people does SHOT get through? Do you know?
It's
100,000?
I don't know. It's so big. I mean, it's what, like 3 or 5 different floors, right? I mean, it's giant.
So according to Google, 2022, approximately 43,000 attendees. 2023, 52. 2024, over 55,500 attendees.
Still growing then.
Yeah.
55,000.
Imagine. That's why I do enjoy it walking through there, because the first few years you've done it, it's overwhelmingly awesome. Dude, look at all this cool stuff. But then you keep going back and back and back, and it's just then it comes down it's just overwhelming.
Yeah.
So much stuff to see. Overwhelming.
People watching as well.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. Trying to navigate to get somewhere is really difficult. Trying to get down any of those hallways, but it's cool.
Right.
It really is.
Are you just working the booth, or do you have time to walk around and check new products?
It's pretty
out?
Strategic. I tried to make it where I give myself 30 minutes to an hour in between each meeting. So that way I can hit other booths and just, talk about potential partnerships with other brands. Right. And just doing collaborations, go see some, old friends, all that type of stuff, right? As well as try to go see what else new is out there that I'm missing that I can only pick up on social media 5 days later, right? When everything kind of ends.
Yeah, you pick up the SHOT Show daily. That was always my move.
Yeah.
You pick that up on your way out, thumb through it, and see what you missed, and then try to check it out the next day.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I mean, I'm only here for 2 days because now the SCI and SHOT are overlapping this year.
So are you going to SCI after this?
Yeah.
So you're going to Nashville?
Literally, I flew down from Montana this morning, got in here at whatever, 1 o'clock. Brady picks me up from the airport. We come over here. Go to SHOT for literally 2 days, Thursday morning, fly all the way to Nashville, do SCI for 2 days, and then fly.
Wow.
But didn't you also just get done doing Sheep Show?
Yeah. And then was just at Sheep Show last week.
Dell's a road warrior right now.
Yeah. Gotta be.
Yeah. Do you like that? Do you like SHOT? Not SHOT Show, but show season? Does it wear you out?
Not really.
Really?
I mean, I've always been that, kind of going back to my military days and everything. Mm-hmm. I was on the road a lot, deployed a lot, trained a lot. So I kind of look at it as I'm always excited for the next trip, mm-hmm. if you will. And it can be hunting. Obviously I get a little bit more excited for the hunting side of things. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just never know who you're going to run into, right? You never know what type of conversations you're going to have during these shows. I mean, mm-hmm. Sheep Show was great for us. We didn't even have a booth. We just went down there just to hang out and kind of decide, hey, like, we need to be here next year.
Gotcha.
So that was really what we were there for. I mean, I was there for just over 48 hours, right? It was mm-hmm. a quick turn and burn type of thing. Basically same thing like I'm doing here. But yeah, I mean, it's fun, you know? I mean, obviously we get to come see people and talk to people mm-hmm. and everything else. Yeah. So it's good.
I didn't realize you were in the military.
Yeah. A little over 10 years.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah,
long time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What, you got?
No, go for it.
I was just going to ask you how you've been with Barnes. You said, I think 6 months now.
Yeah. Right at about six months.
Right about 6 months.
Yeah.
What led you to that, to Barnes?
I don't know. It's weird, right? Like I've slowly kind of worked my way through the hunting industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
After I got out of the military, I went to college, I got a degree, and I got a degree in film and photography, right?
Oh, really?
And then that's where I went to work for Randy, right? So I went to work for Randy Newberg, worked for him for a few seasons as a camera guy, video editor, all that. And then made the jump over to working for Outdoor Sportsman's Group at North American Whitetail, Peterson's Hunting. And then once the kind of my time was up, whatever you want to say, it was time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at, you know, now I've kind of worked all the content side of things and really helping promote brands on that side. Mm-hmm. I want to flip the script and kind of go at it from a manufacturer standpoint and work. Like I looked at it as a longevity thing. I think that working actually in a marketing department or for a specific brand, like bigger brand, just made more sense, right? Mm-hmm. As I get older, everything else, right? You know, you can only run camera for so long mm-hmm. in a way is kind of the way I looked at it. So, yeah, that was
kind of a good what new challenge. Led me.
Yeah. And every step that I've taken, right, I've had completely different roles than what I was doing in the previous, which excites me, right? It keeps me going.
Yeah.
It always gives me, like you said, new challenges, right?
Yeah, it keeps mm-hmm. it fresh and moving.
I think that's kind of good, too, all those other experiences you've had. Like you said, like you're on the other side,
right?
Now you're on this side, so now you kind of know when you were on the other side before how you're dealing with brands, and now you can help expand this brand by knowing all the ins and outs of everything
right.
that goes on.
I mean, like just from the marketing side, right, I know how to help launch products. I know who I want to talk to about helping mm-hmm. launch products, right? Bringing in ambassadors on, how we want to create content, how we want our content to be, you know, perceived to the public, mm-hmm. like all of those things I think is really cool because like I said, I've been on that content side of stuff for the past 7-8 years, yeah. right? So I have all that experience and now to be able to just kind of flip the script is a lot of fun and exciting.
Gives you a perspective.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
On the end user.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've probably seen some things die.
A few.
Yeah. Maybe not hunt with Randy, though, huh? He's a bad shot.
I don't know.
Just kidding. we'll find out if he listens to the podcast.
Yes. We at least made him look really good, right?
That's right. That's right. We wouldn't know if he missed or not, right?
Because
the camera guy did his job.
Yeah. Or the editor did his job anyway.
I'm just kidding. I'm joking because Randy was in earlier today.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
I should say that.
Minutes ago. I think he's still here. We're recording.
I feel like I'm on a good enough basis with Randy. I can throw some jabs.
Yeah,
some
you can
jabs.
Do a little joke.
Well, right on. Brady, what do you want to ask Dale about bullets?
I want to know everything about bullets.
Oh, man.
Is it technical term ammunition or bullets?
I mean,
or projectiles.
Yeah, projectiles.
Projectiles, freedom seeds.
Yeah.
I guess that's a new one to me.
Freedom seeds?
Yeah, I haven't heard that
one. You ever heard called freedom
seeds?
No, never. Because you're trying to get around the algorithm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You say freedom seeds.
You say bullets.
That's how you get your Facebook account back.
Nice.
Freedom seeds.
Freedom seeds.
I didn't know that.
You can start using that.
Okay, well.
Use that in archery. Bring that.
I like bullets.
Yeah. how did, I just want to know, like, did, or do you know, or like, you guys are obviously making bullets all the time.
Yeah.
Did bullet manufacturers get hit as hard during the whole like weird thing that happened in 2020? I won't say it so we don't get like flagged as like,
COVID.
Oh, you said it.
19.
Then you're going to say COVID misinformation is going to pop up.
The
on
other
the
day, my 12 year old said,
well, not anymore.
What?
When, right?
Probably not
We're
anymore.
Good because it's January 20th.
Why did we call it COVID 19?
Instead of like, because people think it started in the year, which was like 2020.
You're talking about 2020?
Yeah.
Like, is that why we called it? Technically started in 19.
That's right.
Maybe it was because it started in 19.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But I think we can say it.
Yeah.
Did bullets get hammered as much as like all their components did?
I think so. It was more about getting the material, right? To be able to make the bullets. So that definitely got hit hard. But at the same time, like there was this huge spike in sales everywhere. So truly, you really didn't start seeing it get hit really hard until after that, which granted, I wasn't in the space that I am now. So obviously, I don't have all the ins and outs, but just talking to everybody around the facility and stuff like that, and kind of seeing where the ebbs and flows have been, there was definitely a lot when it came to getting the proponents, getting, everything that you needed, right? Like, I mean, heck, it's still hard to get powder in places.
It is, yeah.
Still hard to get primers, right? And I think that it's because we're coming off of that. Like, people are still just trying to catch up across the board, and it just makes it tough, right? When there's hundreds of thousands of back orders, I mean, you can only catch up so much.
Yeah.
Seem like we're a little bit better than we were. I know that like this last year I bought bullets at my local sporting goods store. Loaded rounds. And it seems like it was easier to find this year than it was previous years.
I definitely
years.
Think the ammunition side, but like you were saying, I mean, if you're just looking at individual like,
things,
that's where it just starts to get difficult. I mean, again, I think it's still really hard to get primers, for the average consumer, right? I mean, us being in, within the space, it's a little bit easier. You have that kind of direct line to work with somebody else. But for the average consumer that's going to reload or anything like that, it's still pretty dang difficult.
What's the history of Barnes?
Yeah, that's going to be my next thing.
Where did it come from?
I've been here for 6 months, right? Like, come on.
Yeah. Give us like a good Barnes sales pitch.
A good barn sales pitch?
Yeah.
I mean, aren't you my barn sales pitch? Like, watch Brady Miller shoot stuff, and that's my sales pitch.
Let's hope that's the case, because, yes, we're definitely taking a – I should have a tally here. I think I can look it up in a couple seconds. I always keep all my stuff in my notes here, but it's been a lot.
I was curious as to why Mona, Utah, because I know I drive up I-15 and from time to time. And
well, it's actually funny. It got started in Colorado in 1932, right? And then once that the Brooks family actually bought it in 1974 is when it moved to Utah.
Okay.
So it didn't originate there, gotcha. Right? It's just because of like the buying from the Brooks family, they moved it over to Utah. Like you said, it's there in Mona now, just off the interstate. You can see a big red flag, if you will, Barnes on the side of the building. So, yeah, it's there now. Been there for, quite a while. I mean, we've expanded quite a bit over the past 20 years or so to make larger building, everything else to just kind of keep up. But, that's kind of just a brief overview. I mean, it's kind of been through a few different ringers, if you will, right? The Brooks family sold it off to Remington for a while. Remington had some struggles. They sold it off, and then now, quote, recently we've been bought out by a capital firm out of Texas. And, they're the ones which are bringing in a lot of kind of new brass, if you will. And that's how I've kind of come into the role that I'm at now.
Gotcha. You don't? Did you mean that figuratively, or like?
What do you mean?
Pun intended.
New brass. Are you the new brass? Are you talking like actual new brass?
No, sorry. That's pretty good. I didn't even try to pick up on that, or wasn't trying puns
well
here.
Well played. Well played, Dad.
We actually got a new CEO, got a new VP of marketing and business development. Right, like brought in a new sales team. I mean.
Gotcha.
Literally like brought in all new brass, right? To like really bring it back from the post C-19 slump, if we're not saying that word.
Yeah. I didn't know we weren't saying it. Sorry, Brady.
I don't know. I just always see when we brought it up in the past, we got flagged. Like,
oh, really?
If you look at a description, it always say something about like, oh, yeah,
I think all that's been free now, right? We're all free. Supposedly. Free and easy.
Yeah.
Say what you want.
Yeah, I just looked it up. I think it is 15 animals in the last like 2.5 years I've taken with the Barnes bullet.
It's pretty good.
So this last year wasn't the greatest season for me, the 2024 season, but if you look at the 2022 and 2023, a lot in there stacked up.
Gotcha. Why do you choose Barnes bullets?
Why? Because it works.
Okay.
Because I work there.
You guys are buddies.
Yeah. No, just like I mean, people ask me before all the time, like, what are your thoughts on copper?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't know, because I didn't use it before. And I feel like, being the person I am, I like to tinker, I like to try things. And I feel like I kind of want to try things outside my wheelbox. That way I know when people ask me questions like that, like, yeah, all right, what do you think about copper, Brady? And it's like, well, I don't have an opinion right now because I've never used it. So I should probably use it. That way if people start asking me questions, I can be more well-informed and have like a more educated thought process. But okay, here's lead versus copper and hunting situations and terminal performance and all that stuff. And how does it just knock down an animal?
Right.
So I didn't have an experience on it. So yeah, I made the switch, whatever it was, end of 2021 or something like that, okay, and started using it.
So it's not too far or too long ago.
And since then, I've just used it. And I mean, there's a pretty good track record where it literally just works.
Yeah, it just works, right?
Like, it's pretty scary how, like, effective.
And you went straight into reloading, right?
Just reloading,
like, when you were doing it from the get-go. Okay.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, everyone knows I've talked about the whole Tajikistan thing, Marco Polo and Ibex. Like, I specifically built a gun just for that.
Yeah.
Hand loaded it using Barnes, a 208 LRXs. And that's, I mean, it's not a cheap hunt. Let's be honest. Like, everyone can probably look up what the prices cost for one of those. And it's like a once in a lifetime experience. And you think about in that situation, all the things that have to go on, you know, you have to find the animal, you have to be up at that high elevation, training all year for it, all the practice rounds. But like that one press of the trigger is like the most nerve wracking thing you're ever going to do.
Yeah.
In that situation, it's blood or done.
Right.
Like, you don't want to like wound a Marco Polo. You don't want to wound an Ibex. Like, that's a big deal.
Right.
And to put trust in what I did and the bullet combination, like, I knew it would work.
Yeah.
And it did at, you know, almost 16,000 feet elevation and negative 20 some degree temperatures.
And how far was the shot?
409 was the Marco Polo. So pretty close. And then, let's just say 680 was the Ibex, and then over 1,000 on the next shot by the time I got another one in and hit him, you know? So like, it works.
Right. It's pretty solid.
You hand load everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys sell a bunch.
Yeah. I mean, we sell obviously a ton of components, when you're talking about just bullets. And then we obviously sell loaded ammunition as well.
Gotcha.
On the barn side, on the Sierra side, we're selling strictly just, components.
What percentage of sales would you say are people hand loading and they're buying components versus people that are buying ammunition?
Off the top of my head, without being a sales guy, I would probably say 70-30, probably towards the component side being less.
So 70% of people buying a box of ammunition.
I would say
off the shelf, like me, guys like me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think there's any difference as far as accuracy? Like, I often wonder this because, like, I build my own arrows, right? I'm mostly a bow hunter. Build my own arrows. And it's not that I couldn't buy a dozen arrows that are fletch, cut, the whole nine, and probably shoot them okay.
Yeah.
But, like, I like to build my own. I often wonder, does it make a better product? And if so, how? And how does that relate to ammunition?
Personally, I think it all comes, you know, kind of talking about arrow setup, I think it all comes down to your setup, right? Like, your bow and my bow are going to shoot different. Like differently, but we could have the exact same arrow come out of that. And, you know, for whatever reason, my bow is going to sling that arrow a little bit differently, right? Be it my draw length, my little bit of different draw weight, whatever it is. And I think it's the exact same thing when it comes to guns. That's where I think that hand loading can make it that much better. Now, I will say that our tolerances are probably some of the highest out of any manufacturer out there, which is going to make it where that consistency from bullet to bullet or loaded round to loaded round is going to be there, where everything, you know, you start looking at like standard deviation and stuff, and our numbers are very low on like what our tolerances have to be before they're ever going to be, you know, going out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I think that loaded ammunition is the right thing to do. But I mean, I actually got into Barnes close to 20 years ago now because I started hand loading for myself. And for whatever reason, I mean, I was hunting Southeast whitetails in Georgia and I still wanted to hand load. And I just started shooting Barnes because I'd been doing, you know, research and forums and everything else that it's like, if you want to shoot the best bullet, that's just going to, you know, if you're going to get into hand loading and you can get something that is extremely repeatable, right? Like, shoot Barnes. I started doing it and I did it for my 270, and I mean, I had never hand loaded before, and I was shooting like 0.3 inch groups, like on my first time ever hand loading, tweaking a little bit, and it just worked for my gun. So I would say that, you know, the loaded ammunition is great, but if you want to just take it up that next step, right, you might be shooting half inch groups. If you want to take it to quarter inch groups, that's where, you know, you can hand load and kind of tweak it to make it specific for your gun, right? And I think mm-hmm. that's kind of where you,
yeah,
where you go.
So a little more specific for the actual rifle you plan to shoot it out of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gotcha.
I think you would enjoy handling ammunition.
I just don't have time.
Yeah.
Right.
But the thing, say that,
but I'm sure
someone can say the same about a bow, you know, like I don't have time to tune in.
Well, I have time for that.
Oh, okay.
So it's just making the time.
Yeah. Cause you're able to customize so much more.
Right.
In a sense when you're doing it yourself, you can play around with different things, different seating depths, different powder. You know, how you seat the primer, or you do all these little things, combination of everything is going to make it just a little bit better and maybe a little bit more better. And then it allows you to kind of shoot a little bit more, which then means I can, you know, practice more and judge wind more rather than just grabbing that box of ammo a week before the season, slapping them in your rifle and be like, all right, it's good on paper.
Yeah.
Hits a pie plate at 20
yards.
Shoot
5 rounds and be like, oh, well, you know, shoot
and then go
inch groups, whatever, and go
But
on.
As far as ammunition's coming out of Barnes, the factory, right? You guys are... You're loading it the same way Brady would, right? I mean, pretty for the most part, yeah.
How does that, a little bit different? It's about as close as hand loading as you can get without it
being hand loaded.
Being hand loaded by
being,
a person.
Being Brady in his little workshop. Yeah. Hand loading it.
It's pretty impressive, like there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you guys ever want to take a tour, you're more than welcome to come hang out and look it over. I'm sure that Brady would really geek out on it.
I need to stop by.
Like, whatever.
I really need to stop by.
Yeah. So maybe you should do that.
Is it open to the public to stop in?
So you can kind of see like our showroom.
Yeah.
Right. But obviously behind the curtain,
yeah,
if you will. But yeah, I mean, we're also planning to do a lot more content that kind of shows the intricacies behind mm-hmm. the curtain, you know, to an extent, right? You don't want to give away all your secrets.
Yeah.
But I think that we definitely want to start showing that more to the public that way that, you know, they can be excited yeah. about it. But maybe on your way up to...
I'm thinking of a little Go Hunt Labs experiment. You know, maybe we should run up there and do a little rifle shooting and test some things out.
I only know what I know, and I just bought whatever bullets Brady told me to... I should say ammunition Brady told me to buy. So I went to my local Sportsman's Warehouse and bought it and went out and took it to the range, took my 12-year-old with me, and...
Yeah.
We ended up shooting. He outshot me. He shot better groups than I did. But even in saying that, it was better, good enough groups that I felt like, oh, yeah, I can do this. You
right.
know? And that was just off the shelf. You know? And I see your point. I was just curious, like, because I mean, I know like archery, right? If I took me, or like we've had Kyle Douglas on the podcast, like it wouldn't matter what that guy shot out of his bow. Like he could take an arrow that was pre-built, pre-fletched and everything. Like he'd outshoot me because he's a better shot, right? But I was curious, like apples to apples. If you had one guy that was a really good shot and he shot factory and he shot hand loads, like how much better could he shoot, if at all?
I mean, again, I think that it all comes down to like, you know, putting it through that rifle. I mean, obviously the shooter is going to make a big difference, right? But I think that the rifle is also going to make a big difference. But you could also obviously tie it back to like the bullet that's coming out of that rifle mm-hmm. has to be such tight tolerances. And that's where, you know, again, kind of going back to copper versus lead and stuff like mm-hmm. that, right? Like copper doesn't conform to the barrel as much or like going to move around. It's very interesting, right? Like when you're starting to get those speeds and like the dynamics of the barrel and everything. It just mm-hmm. for whatever reason, right? You can make it where depending on the shooter, depending on the rifle, but because I mean, all three of us could go shoot the exact same rifle, exact same thing, but like the shooter is going to make it a little bit better for whatever it is. Yeah. There's so many little, you know, nuances, mm-hmm. right, for everything.
For
and
sure.
Obviously archery is the same way. Mm-hmm. So
what is it about copper that makes it a better bullet than lead, like a lead core?
I think it also kind of comes down to like what animal you're going to hunt. But obviously when it comes to copper, right, you're going to have a ton more weight retention. I think that as you know, if you want to shoot through the shoulder or something like that, like you're not going to like just lose parts of that bullet. So with Barnes, I mean, you know, we're pretty notorious for having 90-95% weight retention. Mm-hmm. Like if you can find that bullet, if you didn't get a full pass through or anything,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that you found your bullet from your moose. I found my bullet from my moose. And I mean, I was pretty dang impressed with it, right?
Yeah. Well, my brother's elk that we recently shot, so he shot the 300 PRC with the 208 LRXs, and it's about like 208, you know, grains. And I know I have a picture somewhere. I probably texted it to him, but it's either like 205 or 206 grains the bullet weighs after going...
You waited after?
After going into the elk.
Of course you would.
And cleaned up all, everything. And yeah, I instantly put it in my pocket. We got home, put on my little grain scale, and like the weight retention's phenomenal.
Right.
Okay. One of the questions I had, I did prepare a little bit, Brady, sorry. One of the questions I had is, like, what are you looking for? Because I've shot a lot of animals with a bow, but I haven't shot that many with a rifle in recent years. But what are you looking for in terms of performance of a bullet on an animal? Like, what should that animal, what should it do? What should it look like?
For the actual bullet?
Yeah.
I mean, I want it to have that nice
Given that pedals, it's accurate, right?
Right.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I want it obviously to be extremely accurate and repeatable.
Yep.
Right. Like it can be as accurate as you want it to be, but if it doesn't do it consistently,
right,
then it doesn't matter. But I want it to be repeatable, consistent, accurate. But then I also want it to have that perfect, you know, quote, kind of mushroom, if you will, four petals for it to come out. And then I want it to not shed the petals, one, and then to have that weight retention. So that way that, you know, when you are finding it, I mean, he brought up his moose and or your brother's bull, right? Like I found mine and I was shooting 180 grain TTSX on my moose hunt. And I want to say it was like 172 grains. So you figure it like it shed a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I shot that moose at 370 or something and found it in the offside shoulder. And I mean, still looks great, right? It still did, and dropped the moose right in its tracks. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, pretty impressive feat. So I think that's where it's at, right? It's just like carrying that kinetic energy and being able to get as much penetration as you can as well, right? Kind of same thing with an arrow, obviously.
Yeah, I was wondering, you hear it. I mean, that's it. You hear people talk ad nauseum about penetration in arrows,
right,
and amount of, you know, weight and kinetic energy and the amount of broadhead weight. And
right,
you hear all these, there's a lot of chatter in archery, but I don't hear as much. I don't think, maybe I just don't live in that realm.
It's very interesting to me that people don't talk about like the kinetic energy,
right,
and the penetration, right, mm-hmm, on a bullet, that they just want it to hit and hit hard, knock the animal down. Or, you know, I mean, there's people that are shooting ballistic tips and they just want the biggest hole that they can create as soon as it hits the animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get that shock wave, if you mm-hmm will, into the animal's vital cavities, right? Where it's like, I want full penetration if I can get it, because if I don't, then I'm not going to have a blood trail, right? You're only going to have one side.
Mm-hmm.
Where as opposed to like with copper, more than likely you're going to get full penetration on both sides, even if you're shooting them through both shoulders, right? A lot of times.
Yeah, I think I've only recovered maybe three bullets.
Yeah, I haven't recovered many.
Like most of the time.
Because they mostly carried through.
Carried right through, yeah. Because you're putting such a large wound channel down with the copper being, you know, pellets back, that mushroom shape and mm-hmm everything. And it's like, it's devastating. Even shot, you know, I've shot some elk in the shoulder. My brother, you know, just off the edge of the shoulder, and we barely found the one. The other one blew right through. It's like, you don't find them very often.
Does the density of copper matter? I would assume it must.
It's interesting because most copper for you to shoot basically the same bullet on lead is always going to be lighter in copper mm-hmm than it is for lead, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, for example, I guess you can take like a 30-06, right? Where like an average might be 180 grains or something. In a lead, you're only going to shoot like 160 grain in a copper. So I don't know if, does that really answer your question, or maybe I'm kind of off track.
Yeah, I was just curious. So copper, I would assume, I mean, I don't know like the properties of copper. Like why copper? Are there other metals? Are you guys testing any other types of?
Maybe.
Okay. You see where I was going with that?
Yeah. Oh, maybe.
Okay. Maybe. Maybe there's some sort of alloy out there.
There could be.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but like in general, maybe like paint a picture, maybe what other benefits do you get from copper?
What other benefits?
You don't kill condors. I know that. I learned that in my mule deer meeting that I went to.
Or eagles.
Or right, eagles.
Or anything like that.
And I say that jokingly, but legit, that's like an actual benefit. I mean, you don't get lead poisoning to birds that are sensitive right. to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I actually did
a... That's actually a real thing.
Yeah, I worked on a project mm-hmm. while I was in college that was working with golden eagles and yep. testing their bloodstream and stuff like that for lead deposits and everything. So that's super interesting that you talk about that. I guess I don't know where you're kind of going, trying to go.
I mean,
with this
I was kind of going to allude to that without saying directly the condor thing. Okay. I mean, like,
oh, you were that's yeah. where you're going?
Yeah.
Nailed it.
I was going to jump into that because you hear that a lot that, okay, yeah, it doesn't
just call me
you
know, Dion just having Warwick
a
bunch
of
lead
sitting on the hillside sitting around. So that's right. a direct, indirect benefit, I guess, of copper
yeah.
bullets.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, if you're out of California, right, you can only shoot that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's a big seller for us. And what's interesting is that people that either moved to California or once they made that, you know, an established rule in California, however many years ago, right, mm-hmm. had never shot copper before. They all of a sudden made the switch and they're like, I'm never going back because they've seen these huge benefits, right, with the penetration and, like you said, large wound channels. So mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty interesting thing is that even when they're not in California, they're like, well, I'm still going to shoot the copper because I know what it does.
Yeah, I could have switched bullets a long time ago back right. to normal lead stuff, and I've just continued it because they,
yeah.
again, they work.
Right.
The mule deer committee I sat on, I remember we had a whole, this gal came that works with raptors and condors in southern Utah. And she talked about, you know, ammunition and copper and lead and the whole thing. And I remember part of that, she showed us a carcass that was shot with a lead bullet and just the fragments.
Right.
And it was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, there was fragments all through that thing. Like right. you're definitely eating some lead if you're shooting yeah. lead bullets. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be, we're going to see more of that in the future, but like lead free hunting regulations.
Right.
But it could be a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that it could be a thing in certain states.
Yeah.
Right.
Is copper more expensive? I would assume
it is.
Yeah. Is yeah. that probably like the biggest holdup for people making the
lead? I definitely think that is partly a holdup, right? Is it's almost like a sticker shock type mm-hmm. of thing. Is that they're just looking for ammo on the shelf, yep. and all of a sudden we're going to be, let's say, $10 to $15 more a box than some other competitors, which is sticker shock, but they don't know all the benefits, right? There's just, unfortunately, not enough information out there, I guess you could say, right? It kind of takes a little bit for you to really learn a lot of that. I mean, obviously, you know, you did a little bit of research on it and you were kind of able to help, but personally, I think that's where it is that they don't understand that it costs more for us to do it. Plus, again, I kind of go back to all of our tolerances. I mean, our R&D process is very intensive. I mean, it might take us a year and a half, right, to like create one new bullet that we want to, you know, put in a, you know, for example, you know, we're doing all these LRX stuff. The 7PRC came out, what, 3 years ago now? And we just were able to come up with a 7PRC bullet that we released back in September, right? Or I guess it was August. And it's specifically designed for the 7PRC round, you know, and we're loading it in ammunition. So I think that comes to a lot of it, right? Is that we want it to do everything that we need it to do, and we don't want to launch a product that is only half-assed, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you think it's a more accurate bullet then? So it sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like it's based on tolerances that go into it.
It definitely is a big tolerance thing.
Maybe not inherently the material itself, or do you think copper is a better, more accurate round?
That's a tough thing to say, right?
Question.
Because, because you also got to think that I also work for Sierra, right? That sure. makes nothing but lead bullets.
Right.
So it's hard for me to say that copper is better.
Yeah.
Because I have some Sierra stuff that's just absolutely out of this world, right?
Yep.
That you can load it up with just a little bit of powder and it doesn't matter how you load it. And that thing's going to shoot half inch groups all day long.
Gotcha.
Right. If you're hand loading.
I'll throw it in there then because I can talk about anything. I don't work for a bullet company.
Unless you're hiring. Just kidding.
What?
Unless you're hiring. Yeah. Just kidding.
Yeah. So yeah, I work at Gohan here. So
that's right
now. But yeah, maybe. they shoot phenomenally at distance. Like I practice literally, I shoot at a mile a lot.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, why do you shoot at a mile? Like, why not? It's like shooting a bow at 100 yards, 120 yards, practicing really far away.
Right.
Dialing in my load perfectly. And I can shoot at a mile consistently. I can back that down to, you know, 1400 yards, 1000 yards. And I'm still able to perform at long distance with the copper bullet as I would with the lead. It's, right. It still shoots phenomenally well.
Yeah. I mean, I guess to say that it is more accurate would be a very difficult thing to say, but I would say that it is
as accurate.
Yeah, it's comparable across the board, right? As long as you're doing what you should be doing,
right?
It's going to perform. Like,
and the
like
tolerances
that's the one,
of the builder type.
Right.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's like, you're more the variable than the bullet is by far, mm-hmm. right? Like the bullet's going to perform because mm-hmm. it's made to do the exact same thing every single time.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But not all bullets, not all ammunition, I guess you might say, is created equal.
Well, it's very true. I guess that's where you're saying ammunition, right? Yeah. Versus bullets. So yeah, versus bullets. You got to always kind of like talk about that that there are definitely other ammunition makers, you know, out there, manufacturers out there, right? That you could literally pull the bullet. I mean, I'm sure that you've done it before. And
if not, we should.
Like one has 4 grains less of powder than the other one. And then the next one you do has 6 grains more powder than that first one, you know? So there's just this huge, and that's where you're going to start to see those inconsistencies. And you think it's you think it's the gun, all that. Mm-hmm. And it ends up being your ammunition, right? Mm-hmm. Where at least ours, I think are, like I said, those tolerances are so tight. Mm-hmm. I think you'd be pretty dang impressed if you started pulling bullets and noticing the difference.
Man, it is weird. I've had rifles that just would not shoot. So like, and I mm-hmm. felt like, man, this gun, in fact, I've got one in my closet that just leans up against the wall there. And man, if you find the right ammunition for that rifle, it's like, oh, it all comes together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It just finds one that it likes, yep. you know? tolerances are tight.
I've definitely had that too, right? That before I was doing this and I was shooting, I mean, you know, my previous role, right? I shot just about every ammunition manufacturer out there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was my job to test all this different stuff and talk about it, right? But even before that, I always, when I would buy a new rifle, the first thing I would do is I'd buy 5 different types of boxes of ammo and sling all of them through there, right? Until mm-hmm. I started getting into reloading. And then I could be like, well, I know I want to shoot this bullet, and then I'll just build my load off of it. And I think that if you wanted to go down that route, right, like mm-hmm. a lot of people just don't have, like you said, don't have the time for reloading. But if you want to get as accurate as you possibly can, like that's where it's at.
Gotcha.
And then you can just know that you want to shoot, for example, you, right? You shoot 208 out of everything.
Everything.
And it's like, I know I want to shoot this bullet. I'll just build my load for it.
That's all I do is I take the bullet first and tailor everything after that.
Right.
Yeah.
So like that rifle that you have sitting there, mm-hmm. that's collecting dust. If we brought it down here to the, say the rifle
the
shop
lab.
At my...
If you can get this one to shoot, you really are a miracle worker.
You got some components.
I've had it for a while.
If you got some components and the time to reload, I think then you could make something.
I might
happen.
Bring it to you and just donate it to you as a project and say, see what you can do with this thing. If you can make this thing shoot, you really are a miracle worker.
I mean, I've had
you really are mule deer Jesus if you can make this thing work.
I've had friends that asked me about, like, you know, load recipes. They had similar rifles than I did. They had 300 wind mags, blah blah blah. And I was telling them the recipe to use. I was like, obviously you got to work your way up, you know, be safe and all that. And like, oh, but I really love this bullet. I really want to try that out. And I'm like, well, you can do that. I know you're probably tied to it. Like, I'm definitely tied to a 208. Right. It works. I know how to work it in a, you know, PRC now. You know, did it in my rum forever. And I was like, just try this. And he kept saying, like, this gun just doesn't shoot. Like, I hate this gun. I want to, like, send it back. Like, the rifle manufacturer messed up. I was like, well, did you try what I told you? Exact recipe and everything. And he's like, finally did what I told him. He's like, man, this thing shoots great now. And I'm like, I wasn't trying to lie to you and tell you, like, oh, like, just use this bullet because whatever reason. And I'm just trying to help you out a little bit. And it's like, I do think you could find something to work for a rifle that you can't shoot. I think you always can.
We'll see.
Yeah. To some degree, figure that out.
Yeah.
Maybe we should bring her down.
We'll play with it and see what you can do with it.
In terms of bullets, obviously Bar and Sierra, is there any shot placement considerations you would do on a copper bullet compared to a lead bullet? Like, do you aim on shoulder on one, off shoulder on the other, or just kind of doesn't matter based on distance maybe too?
I think it depends on species mm-hmm. a lot, right? Like, obviously I can shoot a whitetail with, you know, if I'm shooting a 7 rim mag, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm shooting a 160 grain bullet, and I know it's only going to be 300 yards. If it's a whitetail, I'm going to put it anywhere I need it to do. Yep. And most likely I'm just going to try to drop the animal in its tracks. Mm-hmm. I'm that type of person. I'm not a, I am very much a shoulder shooter, I would say.
You are, would you say?
Yeah. I like to put animals down in their tracks. I don't want to track them if I don't have to. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of comes from me growing up in the Southeast in Florida and Georgia where, you know, it's so thick that you can't see 5 yards in front of you.
Right.
Like I want to drop animals on the tracks.
Yeah.
And I've taken that while I've been, you know, moving out or since I moved out west 10 years ago now.
Do you see less bloodshot with a copper bullet? That you brought that up?
I would say yes, because
you have less fragments that animal through.
Yeah, and I mean that bullet is just pushing through.
Gotcha.
Rather than trying to expand, you know, because lead will expand more. Mm-hmm. Right, like you're going to get just overall like a larger diameter in the expansion, but like you said, you're going to have fragments, you're going to have everything else, where that copper is going to, you know, let's just say it mushrooms out to 1.9, mm-hmm. you know, times what it originally was, but it's going to push through to that opposite shoulder or whatever. Then it might hang up, or, you know, for like when I shot the moose, it was in the, just on the offside or past the shoulder in that offside, mm-hmm. hide. Mm-hmm. So I would say yes, that you could definitely have less bloodshot as well, which is a great thing.
Yeah, interesting.
Sorry. So going back to kind of shoulder shots, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would think that the nice thing about copper, right, is that you can get down to pretty low velocities, surprisingly, mm-hmm. almost getting to the point of you shouldn't be shooting this far anyway, and you're still going to get that maximum expansion with copper, where lead, you know, might kind not. Of pencil out, if you will.
Interesting.
Why is it in rifle hunting, it's like, I don't know. Is there a debate ever internally about shoulder shooting? Should you shoulder shoot or should you not? Is it common, like
to be a shoulder shooter?
Yeah.
Or to not be a shoulder shooter?
Well, I've watched a billion hunting videos where they're like, put it right in the shoulder. You know, you want to anchor that animal, right?
Right.
And I get it, but I never hear like debated on whether it's you should or should not.
Well, I mean, I think what's interesting, right, is like you talk about like hunter's head when you're going through mm-hmm. hunter's head, they always tell you broadside, you know, right behind the shoulder,
yeah,
double
shoulder.
Lung mm-hmm. everything, right? And it's like, yeah, but what if that doesn't happen, or what mm-hmm. if he's quartering,
what if you can't find the animal after the fact because it's Florida and or wherever you know, exactly. It's super thick.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
so, or you know, you're shooting a ballistic tip and mm-hmm. you're shooting behind and it's cool because it hits that front side, but then mm-hmm. it blows up inside of him and you get no exit wound. Yeah. So yeah, the animal's going to die, but he's going to run 150 yards before he dies. You have absolutely no blood trail.
Yeah.
Right. So again, I don't know. Is there a debate? What are your thoughts on
shoulder shooting? I think some people do have the internal debate about like, maybe it's not, I don't think it's an ethics moral thing, but like obviously you hit a shoulder, you're potentially gonna lose a little more meat.
So I would say yes, lose meat, but also I think that your target window becomes smaller as you do that, right? Because you're moving obviously mm-hmm. closer to the head, whatever. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, if you miss towards the head more versus if you're in that vital cavity mm-hmm. Behind the shoulder, now you can miss a little bit further back. You can still hit liver, right? The animal's going to die. You could still hit the shoulder. He's going to probably drop. Now you're kind of moving up.
Mm.
Just your aiming point becomes mm-hmm. much smaller, or your target area is much smaller. I think that to me, that's more of a debate than the potentially losing a little bit more meat. Mm-hmm. If you can't find the animal, you lost all the meat. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's where I go to.
Right.
It's like, I'd rather anchor the animal right there, know that I'm going to bring meat home than.
Yeah. Finding the animal should be first and foremost.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're hunting, you know, public land and mm-hmm. he's close to a private boundary, or you know, it's not that far away,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you want to play that game?
Or so, there's a group of guys flinging lead at it also.
Yeah.
You never know when.
Yeah. I mean, there's just, I
not think that that's ever happened to me.
Yeah. That's why in those situations go for that high shoulder and just put them down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, mm-hmm. I think other people just maybe go back and forth on, you know, shot placement. Just depends on obviously the bullet construction, how the bullet works. Is it a fragment? Is this going to punch through? Because like I do like going for a shoulder,
yeah.
Almost all the time, and especially if I know which way the animal is facing. So I'm like, okay, if the animal's facing to the right, and I go in the shoulder, and he does take a step, and I'm already in the shoulder. Now I'm perfect,
right?
Now it's still, it's right behind the shoulder, where if I aim behind the shoulder in that situation and it takes a step, well, now it's going to go further back a little bit. So I'm giving myself a little bit of wiggle room. And obviously each situation is a little bit slightly different because right. the way, other way he turns, it's going to be the opposite. If he's slightly towards me or whatever. So I just always think of that, but it's just, to me, a shoulder shot. That's why I like, you know, 30 cals, I can, if I hit them usually in the shoulder, they're going to, right. you know, pancake down to the ground and I'm going to not have to deal with things. And I don't know. I think there is a lot on the internet if you want to go dive in the rabbit hole and just listen to the hate.
Love
back and
that
forth.
Internet.
Yeah, what you should shoot and why you shouldn't shoot that and why it's your bullet that failed rather than anything else that failed or distance. And yeah, everyone
right.
seems
yeah,
to
Yeah, it definitely
tear
wasn't the
apart.
Shooter. It was definitely the bullet, right?
Yeah, it's always, yeah. Yeah, it's always the bullet.
It's always the broadhead.
Yeah. Yeah, always the broadhead. You hear the same thing all the time.
Always the broadhead. What? So if you're marketing. You're marketing ammunition and bullets to hunters. What do you, are there any like, what kind of questions do you get? Do you get, what are like the common mistakes you think people make in choosing ammunition?
Not really choosing the right ammunition for their specific caliber. Like, I guess this kind of goes back to even like reloading, right? Like we get a lot of calls and I mean, you know, this would be our customer service guy. I mean, he's there that talks to 20 people a day, right? And and they'll call up and basically have the same type of thing that Brady was talking about, right? Like, try this load, or they're like, I've got this gun, it just won't shoot, like what do you recommend? And he'll have recipes that he's like, try this and call me back in a week. And they call him back and he's like, man, like I don't know what just happened, but it just worked. So we get a lot of questions. I mean, Facebook loads up with questions. It's wild. And you know, I help run social media and everything like that. So most of the time when I'm getting those type of questions and they're extremely technical, I don't even try to answer them because that's not my place. It's like, I'm going to push them off to either our customer service team, or I'm going to like push them off directly to our like head ballistician, right? Because he's going to know the intricacies of why this specific answer works.
Is it mostly like the grain that they're choosing, like,
or it could even be like, why would I shoot a TTSX versus a LRX, right? Okay. So like, or a TSX versus a TTSX. I mean, you, like,
what's the difference in those?
So a TSX is not tipped, right? Where a TTSX is tipped, and then LRX is for a long range expanding bullet, right? Or long range X bullet.
Why would you choose a tipped over a non tipped? What does the tip do?
So a tip actually helps the expansion happen faster,
okay,
which is super interesting. And it's going to help aerodynamically as well. So, you know, depending on what you think, the way we kind of look at it is a TSX is great from, let's say, 0 to 300 yards, right? If you know that your shots are going to be potentially past 300 yards, let's say 0 to 600 yards, you might want to go to like a TTSX. If you want to potentially be a Brady Miller that practices at 1400 and then he's going to shoot at 600 or 800, that's when you're going to want to step to that LRX.
Okay.
So if that kind of helps, right, is that we have these three different classifications, and this isn't all the bullets, but our main bullets that we sell is either a TSX, a TTSX, or a LRX.
What does the LRX have that makes it better for long range?
I bet Brady would probably know better than I will, which is kind of crazy to think about.
That, and then the follow-up question is this, is so you heard him say he practices at 1,000 yards, and I think everybody right now thinks they can shoot something at 1,000 yards, right? I mean, even me, I'm like, oh, I can hit that steel at 1,000 yards. It seems to be like...
Well, hitting steel and hitting live animal after
in the wind.
And you just hiked a mile and a half.
Yeah,
right?
A 20 degree angle or something is completely different. I get that. But it seems to me like just, you know, commonly, I think people now think the gun can do it. We have the ammunition that can do it. It's built specific. It's like long range is the, you know, everybody talks about it, right? Everybody thinks they can do it. How has that changed your guys' business? And I mean, obviously what's different about the bullet, and you know, what recommendation do you give to people as far as, do you know, Brady, how do you address this question?
How do I go choosing a bullet?
That, and then what is it that about the long range that makes
Did you go straight to LRX or did you shoot TTSX for a while?
Nope, I went right LRX.
Okay.
I like a heavier, you know, weight for the caliber. Okay. So I want to go as heavy as possible, but right. obviously
no replacement
not going,
for displacement.
No replacement for displacement. You guys know I use that quote all the time. and just like, I kind of just start there. Like I probably go backwards than most people. I don't try to, you know, grab a bunch of different bullets and see what kind of works. I'd rather go a heavier bullet.
Okay.
Cause for me, I'm shooting, you know, typically a larger
caliber.
So, mm-hmm. you know, 300 rum. Mm-hmm. So the big cartridge, you know, a 308 diameter bullet. And I start bullet and then I just work through all the components backwards.
Okay.
Like I know I want that. I've know based on looking at how the bullet is shaped, how it's designed, you know, the boat tail aspect of it, you know, the overall length of the bullet, everything about the bullet to me leads to, it's going to shoot really, really well. Cause I know it's I just look at how it's designed and then I know it can, you know, perfectly expands every single time. Cause as the tip on the end, and I know if I'm going to hit an animal, as long as I'm above, you know, that 1,800 feet per second range on an animal, which to me, I can easily shoot. I think I've written down right here for this, for example. So yeah, it's at 1,000 yards. I'm still 1,794 feet per second. My bullet is going, my 208 LRX at 1,000 yards, which equals 1,487 foot pounds of energy. So I still have 1,000 yards. I have plenty of, mm-hmm. you know, penetration, whatever you want to call it, power, energy, you know, to go into that. So I'm shooting 3,189 feet per second out of my rifle. So I got to start. No, I look at bullet design and then I start there and then just go backwards. I probably way different than everyone else. Cause again, I reload. So it's a little bit easier for me to say that, but like, I'm not interested in shooting, you know, 180 grain bullet, whatever else. I want to go the heaviest possible without like, you know, the point of diminishing turns. Like obviously I don't want to shoot something stupid, stupid heavy that I'm going to get, you know, a lot less feet per second, but to start with something that I know is going to work, it's going to still have, you know, expansion at distance that I need, that maybe figure out what kind of distance you are shooting.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing is, like, I think myself included, you walk into a sporting goods store and you see boxes of ammunition there and you see one that says long range on it and you're like, that's the one I need.
Yep.
Cause I'm a long range guy.
Right.
But maybe I'm not.
Yeah.
I guess is the point I'm making. Right.
Yeah. I mean, for that LRX bullet, right. It's got a higher BC than just like the normal TTSX bullet's going to have, or the TSX bullet's going to have.
Okay.
So, you know, again, as we've kind of gone down this road of everybody wants to be a quote long range guy, or gal, that they want to have these higher BCs to be able to buck the wind better, be able to, you know, to just have an overall better arc, if you will, in their shot. But the great thing is that, you know, when I was talking about the differences of like TSX, TTSX, LRX of like 0 to 300, 0 to 600, is that LRX is still going to perform at 50 yards and it's still going to perform at 800, right? Where like that TTSX, I mean, it's still going to perform out there, but you're starting to really kind of push its limitations. The LRX was really designed that like even down to 1200 feet per second, right? As you get down that much lower velocity, it's still going to expand to 2x of its original diameter. Gotcha. The TTSX really wasn't designed that way.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And like you said, like BC, the ballistic coefficient, you've heard us, I think, talk about that on the podcast a little bit. Like,
I'm familiar.
Maintaining velocity, no resisting wind, and that sort of thing. So that is an important number to look at. I wouldn't say it's end all be all for me, too, because it's like, okay, yeah, high BC bullet, you know, I know it's going to have flatter trajectory, less wind resistance, you know, retain energy a little bit and all that stuff. And like, potentially it's effective, more of effective long range bullet, the higher the BC number.
Is the long range more expensive?
A little bit more.
Gotcha.
Not crazy considerable.
Yeah.
But like, just all those factors come into play. Like you said, like grains, sure. Like, you know, you could think just a little bit more energy behind it.
Yeah.
But then the BC numbers, like I said, just the whole overall bullet construction, you know, just... How does that bullet fly? How does it, you know, perform? Does it perform, like you said, at 100 yards compared to 1,000 yards? Like, I want everything. I want a bullet that can do it all. I don't just want a bullet that I have to shoot, you know, 400 yards and in. Like, what happens, you know, hunt of a lifetime and I have to shoot 700 yards?
Right.
Like, obviously, I need no wind and all that stuff, but I want to perform.
Yeah, so you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you also, you know, the thing is everybody always thinks that they're going to shoot further than they are.
Sure.
Right? Like, so... Be realistic with yourself. Yep. If you know that you're going to go hunt Midwest whitetails, for example, and the furthest shot truthfully is only going to be 300 yards, like yeah, you can buy the LRX and we'd be happy to sell it to you and everything else.
It'd
right?
Be great.
And yeah. It's going to, it's still going to perform great for you. But if you can shoot a TTSX or a TSX, then why not do it? Right. Because that's more built for what you're trying to do even more than the LRX is.
Is there, much distinction as far as like grains? So you said, so like a 7PRC, right? You can buy that in a variety of grains, a bullet, right?
Yeah. For us, I mean, for the ammunition side of things, right, like we really have one bullet that is designed to shoot out of a 7PRC.
Okay.
So we just built this 160 grain LRX bullet.
Okay.
Right. And we just put it directly into our LR long range rifle ammo line. So because, again, the 7PRC was obviously built because of higher BCs, blah, blah, blah. So we wanted to make it like, okay, if that's going to be the case, then we're going to put it directly here and everybody can just get it that way. So to kind of go back to like grain weight, I mean, for example, in 284, I think that we have six or seven different grain weights for that diameter bullet, but one bullet is truly optimized for one specific caliber.
Yeah.
So like, that's how we're kind of like building these things out. Right.
When would you choose a different grain and why?
Again, I guess it just goes back to species. Like, how far are you shooting? I mean, there's a lot of different questions, right? I mean, you can be the Brady, and I've been the same way, right? When I was building for my 270, I just had, I grabbed 140 grain TTSX and it was like, I know that I can do everything. I've killed elk with it. I've killed antelope with it. I've killed whitetails with it. So I know that it will do that. But if I really wanted to, right, I could have been shooting 160 grain and just went up. But now I'm giving up somewhere in my velocities and everything else to get that little bit, you know, 20 grains heavier. Like, you know, Brady's just going to shoot a 208 because that's what he's happy with. He's built it up. Yeah, so
Brady, why don't you shoot 160 grand?
No replacement for displacement. I'd rather shoot just something big and heavy and still flies fast.
That's why it's faster.
What?
It's faster.
I know. I still got the velocity. You know, like what I say, 3189 feet per second on a 300 RUM shooting the 208 LRX. That's
but what's the one, what's that's feet per second on a 160?
I mean, what could you push it to, right? You could actually have it at the same speed that he has it at right now.
Sure.
If you really wanted, but.
So for example, when you said like, what are different, you know, grain values, obviously every single manufacturer should be different, but I just pulled up Barnes' website because we're looking at 308s because, you know, I shoot a 308 diameter bullet. So we got 175 grains. So this is just the LRX. That's what the bullet I love. 175, 190, 200, 208. And then you got the boat tail, the bore riders at 212. So that's all the ones you have in the 308. And they're obviously, as you go less, they're a little bit cheaper, you know, a little bit, the 208, 212, they get a little bit more expensive. So like, do you, like you said earlier, do you need to be shooting a 208 when you're only going to be hunting whitetails and you're only going to be shooting 100 yards because of the thick timber?
Right.
Probably don't need to. Maybe then overall you could, if you're reloading, you're probably going to be saving on other parts of the components as well, powder and that sort of thing. Sometimes, you know, I found, I don't know how true it is, a lot of times some of these heavier bullets sometimes are harder to find the perfect recipe for. If I shoot something lighter, it is actually a little bit easier to find what works for because that range is a little bit bigger in my experience. And so I can easily find something that works for something less. It might have to not have to go to the range a bunch of times to try to find that perfect, perfect exact load recipe that's going to shoot something a little bit bigger.
Do you think it's, so I go back to everything archery, right? So typically like a heavier arrow is easier given the spine, everything is right. It seems like it's a little bit easier to tune if it's going a little bit slower. So if it's shooting 280 feet per second, it's a little bit easier to tune with a fixed blade broadhead than a 300 feet per second arrow. Do you find the same thing? That's the with thing rifles?
Too. Yeah, it is, but I like to kind of hot rod things too. I like to go up to that threshold of.
Well, I think, and sometimes, right, you can have two different thresholds, right? You can have a very slow threshold that like works really, really well. You shoot it really, really well. And then all of a sudden, like you'll find this, let's say 3 grain gap that like the thing just flies all over the place. And then all of a sudden you hit it again. And for whatever reason, because of the barrel harmonics, right, of your rifle, it's just, you know, putting that bullet out at the exact same spot for those two different places. So you can definitely kind of play on both sides of it. I've had it before. I mean, and then also again, right, depending on the bullet, sometimes it just seems like every time you go up, you're literally calculating a tenth of an inch to try to find where is that absolute sweet spot. So,
gotcha.
And I will say, I may or may not be in load development right now on a 160 LRX in my 7 PRC.
I told you. See?
Just may or may not. May or may not be working on something.
I knew you'd come around.
May or may not have been reloading a bunch last night, reloading a bunch again tonight.
I knew you'd come around.
I got a lot of load development doing this next week.
Somebody may or may not have told him to shoot the 160 instead of the heavier 168.
I really wanted that he wanted to. And then you told me, look at the BC numbers on the 160s. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Hear from somebody that knew.
Yeah. I might have been talking to him.
They trusted.
May or may not be, potentially shooting a pig next week here.
Hogzilla.
Hogzilla. Yeah.
That's right. How much talk do you hear? I mean, because the other thing I hear right now is like suppressors. Everybody's talking about suppressors, getting suppressors for their rifle. Do you guys do anything different as far as recommendations for?
I mean, I personally haven't. I've been shooting a suppressor for the past.
Oh, you have?
2.5 years.
Do you do anything different in regards to picking a bullet, picking ammunition?
Not for me.
Okay.
I mean, I've shot. Like I said, I've been shooting a suppressor or suppressed rifle for the past 2.5 years now. And I refuse to even like hunt with anybody that isn't shooting suppressed. I'm kind of at that point that it's like, it's pretty much uncivilized. if you're not doing it,
Brady, you uncivilized.
I know. I've hinted at it. Everyone maybe should know or don't know. I have owned a suppressor now for, let's see here, 14 months.
Mm-hmm.
Physically in my hand. 14 months and I still haven't taken an animal with it.
Have you shot at the range?
I haven't even taken hunting.
Have you shot at the range?
Yeah.
What have you seen the differences?
I mean, obviously it's a lot quieter. Yeah. I don't see any differences in terms of performance.
Right. No, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I want to, and eventually I will just to try it out. Cause again, it's the same thing with, you know, the copper lead thing earlier. I didn't have an opinion on it. Obviously I have a very strong opinion of why I do dislike suppressors for hunting, but I'm going to try it just to use it. But yeah.
Do you feel that your muzzle brake takes more recoil out than your suppressor?
And that's where for me, it's a little bit different because I, you know, shooting a 300 RUM and then put a suppressor on there, it's really not going to tame it as much as a directional brake does. Yeah. But obviously, you know, I have a 6.5 Creedmoor that I use as my training rifle. That's phenomenal to shoot with my suppressor.
Right.
Because it's just, it makes it super quiet. That if I had a brake on it, it's really already tame anyway. So it's not really that much difference between a directional side port brake than a suppressor. So it's like, might as well for that shoot a suppressed. So I actually do enjoy that one suppressed a lot. That's the one I brought to the SIG Art Games.
Yeah, right.
That suppressor.
Mm-hmm.
And shoots phenomenal. But it's like right now, I am in the, obviously I'm talking about load development. So I've been developing my load right now for suppressed on that 7 PRC, but like I said, I hinted at it, the state that I'm going to may or may not allow suppressors, so I have to swap it ahead of time, and because I'm kind of crazy, I'm tweaking my load a little bit just for the non-suppressed rather than putting everything in ballistic calculators and trying to do all that.
So the state you're going to doesn't allow suppressors?
Yeah.
That seems odd.
Yeah.
Have you noticed much of a difference shooting suppressed versus non-suppressed?
I'm just doing my, probably tomorrow is going to be the first time I'm doing my actual non-suppressed.
Okay.
So the first good test.
I personally haven't seen hardly any difference. Yeah. Like if I shoot suppressed
and or I wouldn't think so either, besides for point of impact shit, because barrel harmonics having that.
Are you talking difference in accuracy, difference in performance of the actual bullet itself?
Just literally like difference of point of impact.
Impact.
No. Like I mean, I'm talking very minimal, like maybe half an inch.
What difference have you noticed personally?
That's what I'm saying.
No, I mean, like, do you feel more confident with a suppressed rifle because it's not as loud?
I mean, obviously, so I never shot a break before.
Kay. Oh, okay.
So, I mean, the recoil alone to me is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and obviously the sound. And I mean, I do shoot with earplugs even when I'm hunting, but I have those Odo Pro earplugs that have like the pass through, so I can still have a conversation, and then it just shuts off as soon as I shoot, right? But I still do that even when I'm shooting suppressed, just because I like almost feeling absolutely nothing when I shoot and hearing absolutely nothing, and it's just I've done that multiple times on hunts now, and it just works. I definitely feel more confident when I'm getting behind it. I know that I can get on the animal again very quickly, right? And get a follow-up if I need to.
I know this year that deer I shot, I didn't have time. Like, I had earplugs, but they were in my pack. And they were just the foamies, you know?
Right.
And, like, we got up on this buck. He's 390 yards or something. And I remember thinking I should really put put him in. And I think I was like, nah, there's probably a chance I'm not going to get a crack at this buck. Like, he's alert, you know? As soon as I shot, because I told my kid was with me, I said, plug your ears. He was back 20 yards. So I said, get some space, you know, stick your fingers as deep as you can. Man, just rocked me. I remember thinking, oh, yeah, I remember why I dislike rifle. Man, it rocks you.
Yeah.
And then I think the last time you shot with a rifle was my 300
round. Yeah, and I shot his. Oh, yeah, I shot an Audad. Yeah, Barbary Sheep in Texas, same thing. Brady was like, here, you know, and I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm old school, right? And man, it did. Like, I felt it.
That's the mentality that my dad and my brothers always have. Because I was like, I set up that 300 PRC for my brother's elk hunt. Yeah. I was like, do you want me to throw my suppressor on there? Obviously, I can't give you my suppressor afterwards because it has to be with me. But right. When I'm out in the field, we can use it together.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And my dad's like, yeah, you know, it's only, you know, one shot. That's all it's going to be. And it's like, well, you think about it that way, like, oh, one shot unsuppressed, but like one shot unsuppressed times 10 years, that's 10. Right. You know, maybe you miss that animal a couple times in the field. That's could be all of a sudden now 5 or 6 of on ear protected shots that you're taking.
All I know is I remember it pretty vividly. Like
the rum knocked you hard.
Yeah. Oh, both of them. Yeah. I mean, even this one that I shot, that 7, I remember thinking like, damn.
Do you remember what bullet you shot your odd dad with?
No. I don't remember.
I bet it was one of those.
This guy, the
one that killed it.
The 208 LRX. You didn't.
Dale Brady puts me on the gun. His last day, last night, right? Yeah. And he's like, "We've got this nice sheep, you know, nice ram." And Brady's like, "Take a couple dry fires." And I was like, "Really? I'm good, man. I'm golden. Just let me shoot this thing." And I can still shoot a little, huh?
Yeah,
I got it, but
you shot perfectly. I think I told you couldn't have put the
could have drawn it on there any better. But yeah, it did rock me pretty hard.
Yeah.
But no difference in bullets then or anything in regards to it.
Not that I've seen personally.
They really shouldn't, in a sense. Just like I said, just different point of impact.
Right.
But
I mean, even I haven't even seen that much of a shift in impact personally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just me being me, that's why I want to test it. Like, is there something I do with my load differently between the two? Especially, you know. I just want to experiment.
Distance, but I mean,
like 1,000.
I would be interested to see like when you put the suppressor on, right, and you shoot, and if it's consistently, if the point of impact changes half an inch or whatever, right, but if it still hits the same hole over and over, it's like, don't mess with your load, just mess with your scope, right?
Yep,
like,
and then
it's super easy.
I'd rather do that than mess with the load.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting, but I wish I could use a suppressor on this hunt. But
it just sounds weird to me that state doesn't allow a suppressor when it's like, why don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, it's noise pollution. You think they'd be big on that?
Are they going to start a fire or something?
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah,
What's your favorite combo? Like favorite caliber, favorite bullet, favorite grain?
Ooh, that's a good question. You weren't preparing.
I prepped.
Yeah. I'm a podcast host. I'm a 270 or a 284 type of guy. I've always been that ever since I was a teenager. So I started shooting a 270 when I was, you know, young growing up, had a 30-30, went to a 270. From there, I went to a 7 mag. From there, I've gone to a 7 PRC.
Okay.
So give me a 284. Give me somewhere in that 160 grain. Obviously, 160 grain LRX makes a lot of sense for me, but give me something in that 160 to 170 grain.
So that's kind of your...
I feel like I could kill
anything
on the continent.
Is there... would you take that on a moose hunt?
I mean, why not?
Why not? Yeah.
Did I take it on my moose hunt? No, I shot a 30 cal on my moose hunt. But yeah.
My tool for the job.
So, yeah.
Gotcha.
Which it worked great. I mean, it was 300 Weatherby.
So that's kind of your current favorite 7 PRC with 160 grain.
Yeah.
Barnes.
I mean, I still shoot my 300 Weatherby if I want to. I've got a 6.5 PRC. I mean, you know. Being kind of in this space, right? You got a little bit of everything and just kind of play, you know, depending on what the hunt is or what I'm trying to test, right? Because at this point now, it's like I have my always go-to, but also I'm always like, you know, kind of two steps ahead and trying to test new things, right? So like that hunt that we were talking about that I was on when we or had a phone conversation. I shot 308 on that hunt, right? And that was a 160 grain, 165 grain bullet.
Looking back, I felt so duped on that phone call. They were like, oh, yeah, we may be out here, barely any service. I didn't even assume they were hunting. And all of a sudden, like, later, like, oh, yeah, we killed a couple hours later. And it's like, you guys, keeping all incognito on what you're testing out there.
Yeah.
What about, let's say you had a Southern Arizona coos deer tag.
What would I take?
Yeah.
Probably something that I don't even own yet, but I really want one.
Okay.
But we don't build ammunition for it, so that's why I won't buy one.
Okay.
But in saying that, I would probably just take a 6.5 PRC and call it good.
6.5?
Yeah. Make 127 grain LRX. That it's like, I think that would do the job on
for sure
just about anything as well, but obviously do the job on a coos pretty well. But we also might have something new that could really work on a coos pretty well. Mm. But you'll just have to wait on that one.
These little nuggets.
Yeah.
These little nuggets. Bread crumbs being dropped.
So what I'm kind of understanding a little bit, and maybe you can just drop it out there. Do you believe in changing caliber / cartridges for different species you're kind of hunting? Or would you say, like, if some guy right now wanted to buy his first rifle or bought one before, and maybe you could just get by buying X and then you'd be kind of totally fine if it's, you know, 7 PRC or a Win Mag or something like that? Or do you, like that question right there about, like, if you're going to hunt a coos deer, obviously go something smaller so you don't tear up the animal more. Right. Like, or is there, like, what do you, I don't know, do you think there's pros and cons to that? Or
I definitely think there's pros and cons to it if you're at that level, right? If you're literally just getting into the sport and buying your first rifle ever.
You might want to buy one to accommodate.
Yeah, like find something in that middle ground, right? I think you kind of go back to that 270 or 7 mag. I think you can do just about anything with a 270. I mean, I think you can go moose hunting and go kill a moose with a 270, right? If you control your range and everything else, pick the right bullet.
One ring to rule them all, Brady.
Ooh.
Did you like that?
I did.
Did you know he's a big Lord of the Rings nerd?
We talked about it on the way over here.
Are you too?
No, I've never watched a single Lord of the Rings in my life, and I never will.
I even told him my truck's name.
Yeah. You named it?
Yeah.
What is it?
Gandalf the Grey.
Oh, I like that.
Except there's like five other people that have already named their trucks the same thing.
Yeah. Supposedly I found one on the internet this weekend. I was like searching my truck up, and I hit this forum because I was like searching about, you know, different things about the truck. And this guy's username is Gandalf the Grey, and it's the exact same truck I did. So, and I'm like,
nerds.
And I literally, three days ago, I named my truck, and all of a sudden now there's someone out there with all the name.
Wow. Same,
yeah.
Wild.
So, yeah, to kind of get back to your, unless you want to go further into your Lord of the Rings.
No, we're good. I always have to do one small little rant for a little while, yes.
Yeah, so if it was me, right, I'd say get a 270, get a 7 mag, something like that, and you can do anything across the country with it. I mean, I was shooting, you know, southeast whitetails that weigh 150 pounds with 7 mag, and then I came out west and I'd shoot elk with it, or I'd shoot antelope with it, whatever. But now that I've gotten, you know, 15 rifles in my rifle case, right, ranging from 223 all the way up to 300 Weatherby, it's like I kind of pick my poison for what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think it just comes with, like, again, age and what you can afford at the time compared to what you can afford later in life. Like, yeah, early on, just one for everything. And then later on, it's like, oh, it might be fun to try this versus this. And
But I think that also, you know, you could buy 6.5 Creed if you really wanted to. And if you have the right bullet, it's probably going to help you take that animal, you know. So then it kind of goes back to, it doesn't really matter what caliber you have. If you're shooting the right ammo, right bullet, right, then you're going to be able to do it better justice than maybe it could do, if you will, or what it was built for.
Gotcha. Do you guys do everything right there in the factory? Is it full factory?
Full factory.
What, I mean, do you build, I mean, where does your brass come from and all that? Does it, I mean, what does it look like on your floor? I was curious.
It all depends on where our brass comes.
Okay. Right?
Just because of, I mean, so we do not do brass there. That's not the only thing. We don't do primers, right? So basically we make bullets and we make the ammo there. Gotcha. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So we've got,
so you take your bullets, you put them together with the brass and the primer, and you make ammunition.
So we're going to buy primers. We're going to buy, so you make powder.
You make bullets.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got quite like a lot of bullet presses.
Yeah.
And some of them, which are super cool, they're like World War II bullet presses.
Really?
And they still are the best thing, I mean, that you can have. And they just work, right? They don't break down. Yeah. They're easier to fix than new age stuff, right? That has the computers and everything and you know, like different types of computers, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. the technology. Like those older things just work. They're consistent.
Different generation.
Yeah. So
greatest generation.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Does it take a lot to actually come out with a bullet and be like, all right, this is one we're gonna go to market with and like
yes.
push it out there?
Simple like, answer is yes.
Yes, a lot.
I mean, it definitely, you know, the R&D process. I mean, but at the same time, like our Bullet Lab guys are always working on, again, something 5 steps further down the line mm-hmm. that they want to be on, right? Like they're looking at stuff that we could potentially release in 2030 already.
So and you got to be working pretty close with rifle manufacturers, right?
Yes.
Those guys are, sure. You guys are working together.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like Federal just came out with the 7 Backcountry, right? And like, mm-hmm. you know, we were working with them.
Right.
So they can have the TTSX, loaded in that.
What's the Backcountry? What is that rifle?
Well, I mean, it's a new caliber.
Oh, it's a brand new caliber?
Brand new caliber. All together.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. Okay.
Have you talked much about this at
all? No, we haven't talked about it at all. I've definitely looked a lot, and I got a few text messages like, what do you think about it? And I was like, I really don't know yet.
I haven't shot one. I haven't even seen one in person or anything like that, mm-hmm. but it seems pretty impressive, especially when I'm a 7 guy, you know, from my all the way since a teenager. It's very interesting to me. I think that there could be some flaws or not flaws, but like drawbacks, if you will. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, but a 20 inch barrel that can get 3,100 foot per second on 160, 170 grain bullets. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. That is really cool. Yeah. Cause I think it'd be so cool. Like to start with, all right, we're going to make a bullet.
It's supposed to be like a chicken and the egg thing because they must say to you, this is what we're thinking. Right. And then you've got to develop a bullet for what they're thinking.
Well, I mean, they essentially took a bullet that we already had and were able to like then craft their load around it to be able to get to their specs that they wanted to get to. Right.
Right.
So it's pretty damn impressive. Yeah. I think, I mean, they're also pushing, you know, some very high pressures. And I think, you know, a lot of people's drawback, right, is that it could be potentially hard on barrels mm-hmm. and, you know, wear out really quick. But I don't know. It's interesting. It looks like Brady's got something that he wants to jump in.
No, I'm just looking up bullets again. I was like geeking out on stuff. Like I said, like I can't imagine the R&D process when you take, let's make a boat tail at this little angle and you got a little bearing surface, you know, you got the ogive, you got the tip. What's, you know, test out different tip designs, like how fun that could actually be to sit down and be like, all right, we're going to try to make something.
One just slightly change the ogive and
just
see
a little
how it changes
bit more angle,
and then change
a like how's it fit into the rifling, like all that stuff. Like, and then you're trying to make something that fits obviously in a wide range of different setups, but like the length of everything, like how that all comes together. Like,
she must employ some engineers, huh?
Yeah. Like I'm just trying to like envision like what that might look like.
Yeah. It's
probably mind blowing.
Like I said, I think you need to stop by the shop and nerd out for a couple of days.
Mm. That would be sweet.
Have you ever burned through a barrel?
I've never burned through a barrel.
Do you know anybody that has? I hear that talk. You hear it talked about all the time. Brady, do you?
Match shooters, maybe. Right. That are shooting 10,000 rounds a year. But even that, right? Like what is truly burning?
What is?
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing for me is that's why when, you know, if I don't know, we've never gone to the rifle range.
Nope.
You and I. But like when I go to the rifle range, I shoot, you know, one shot, stop, let my barrel cool for like at least 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And put my barrel cooler in there and shoot again and let it cool.
Barrel cooler.
Yeah. Like I'm not trying. Like when I.
Is that like an ice pack?
Yeah. No, that's a little basically
they're
fan.
Cool. No, I will say they're super cool.
Yeah. Just a little like fan device. I have a little hose going out that I push it in, turn it on, cool everything down. Like my dad's done CO2 cartridges before, like done all sorts of crazy things that help cool down a barrel. But like to me, when I'm out hunting, I get one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I need to shoot and practice cold bore all the time. Like I'm not trying to rapid fire 10 rounds down the barrel and heat it all up And then, like, I think that adds more to wear and tear than I think you could, in a sense, you know, burn out a barrel by doing that multiple times. Like, my rifle is not set up for, like, a PRS competition rifle where I'm actually shooting 300 rounds in a weekend. Like, I don't do that. Like, I shoot what I need to do to get a big aggregate for my 100-yard zero, practice that long distance, practice that a mile, and then it's just practicing all throughout those distances, and I just take a lot of time in between shots so I don't overheat my system and try to, like, put extra firecrackings in I don't need to, and, like...
So when you go to the rifle range, how long are you normally there on during one
I've gone to the rifle range and shot once and walked out and came home.
Yeah, but what's your average?
Average?
3 hours? And a half,
2 hours probably, yeah.
And you're shooting 20
Maybe 20 shots. Maybe, yeah. But I want to try to repeat as best I can a cold bore situation because I want that one shot to be perfect.
Yeah, I definitely need to get a barrel cooler. I think that would help. I love going to the range during the winter months, obviously up in Montana.
Yeah, the winter's best.
And it's like 15 degrees outside.
Yeah.
It's like, if you can bear it, one, you don't have to worry about the other uncivilized humans out there that don't have silencers or suppressors. You know, but also, right, you can kind of get through your, because I only shoot roughly 10 to 15 rounds when I go to the rifle range. And it's like, you know, I'm shooting out of 300, I'm shooting 100, whatever, and just kind of like playing around just to recheck zero, or I know a hunt's coming up, whatever. So I'm right there with you. But it would be nice in the summer months when you're really prepping to have that cooler. I've seen quite a few of them. Like, I've been at the Weatherby facility quite a bit and shot in their downstairs range. We have our downstairs range at the Barnes one, right? And that's the first thing you shoot around, and it's like immediately throw that thing in there. And then you have a little heat, like, temperature gun that you're hitting the, I mean, you do the same thing.
I have the exact little temperature gun thing. It's got the two little lasers on and point aim at the barrel, aim at the ammo. So I know
what,
all that
what
stuff.
What temperature are you shooting for? Just ambient temp?
I'm just trying to write it down. Just collect data. So I know what my ammo does.
But I would think you'd want to be kind of that ambient temp, right?
Yeah. But it's like, I'm not trying to, I need to keep it under this. I'm just recording it. Okay, what does my ammo do in this temperature situation? What does it do, you know, when I'm shooting in the summer at 102? What does it do at, you know, 70? What does it do at 5, 10 degrees? And I can calculate all that stuff in my ballistics app so that way I can get the best shot possible and take in all that situational.
Do you ever shoot rounds back to back just to see, and like in a hunting situation where maybe your first shot didn't, you know, impact where you wanted it to?
Yep, for sure. So it's not just one shot.
Yeah, one shot.
But like, I want that one shot to be perfect. But yeah, every now and then definitely do like, you know, three shots.
Pretty quick.
Just
so you have kind of a working idea on what it does.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
What about a Yeti with some ice in it? That's a barrel cooler.
It's definitely.
Really?
I've taken a towel, throw it in there, put it on top of the barrel. My dad used to do the same thing, but then take his rifle and also put it in the truck and have the truck cranked with AC and put it up there, try to get cooled quicker.
Interesting.
Sometimes, you know, people say you can like put the barrel vertically. It'll help cool a little better with the barrel cooler in it rather than laying it horizontally, just so the heat dissipates. And like, it's all sorts of ways just to do it, but I mean, it just makes it fun and geeky. Cause like I said, I record everything.
Yeah.
I have so much data.
Interesting.
Data.
Nice. Well, I've asked all my questions.
Right, I'm up.
I just rapid fired them out there. I ran through them, everything I wanted to know.
Everything you want to know?
Yeah, I have a good idea now. It's a 7 PRC and 160 grain Barnes.
There you go.
That would definitely do the job. I just want to talk, how'd your season go?
My season?
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. I mean, I didn't fill as many tags as I'd like to, but
I thought you had a pretty A+ season.
No, I'm not saying that I didn't have a good season, especially for certain species.
Yeah.
What species?
Oh, whitetail.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I killed like my two biggest whitetails basically like back to back. It was kind of crazy.
How big?
I was in Iowa. I hunted public on Iowa with archery.
I remember.
I shot like 164 inch deer on public.
I remember seeing this post.
Yeah, so did that, and then like literally 2 weeks later, I shot like 168 inch deer with a rifle. So it was kind of cool.
Wow, that's wild. As you're saying that, I'm remembering the exact picture.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool. Got to do some ammo testing. Obviously, I shot a antelope in Montana with a unreleased bullet. That was super cool.
Titanium, Brady.
Titanium.
Write that down.
Yeah. I mean, basically, Let's see, all the animals that I killed this past season was with unreleased stuff, which was kind of cool, other than obviously the archery deer in Iowa. Yeah.
But meet your expectations for what you were hoping?
Absolutely. Every single one of them dropped where they needed to be. Mm-hmm. Not a single deer or antelope took a step, which is kind of nice.
Is whitetail your favorite?
No.
No?
No.
Mule deer.
I grew up whitetail hunting, right? Sure. I'm from the Southeast. I'm from Northeast Florida. So like I've hunted whitetail all over, but it's kind of funny that like now that I've been living out West for a decade, it's almost like I still have that draw to like want to go do it. And I've wanted to hunt Iowa since I was a kid, yeah. Right? Like that was kind of the mecca of it back in the 90s when I was really getting into hunting. So I finally draw an archery deer tag, you know, and just decided to go do it. And never even saw the unit before I got there in middle of November. And 6 days later, I kill pretty damn good deer.
So you're saying I should burn my Iowa points?
I was going to say, what gave you the balls to do that? Go to Iowa, hunt public land, why DIY.
Not? Why not?
I mean, I talk about it all the time. Yeah, I haven't been.
I've hunted public quite a bit in the whitetail space, and it's just fun. I mean, I've done it in Oklahoma. I've done it in, Missouri. I've done it in Kentucky. I mean, I've done it, you know, obviously Montana, Wyoming, that type of stuff as well. Kansas, right? So I've done it. It helps that, you know, I know quite a few whitetail freaks or whatever you want to say out there that just live for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my buddy had never even hunted the spot. And he was just like, yeah, like, you know, I've heard some good things about this and inner circles. Like, here's a couple places, go check them out and, you know, gotcha. Go put boots on the ground. I just
went and did it.
Just went and did it.
That's awesome.
So it was super cool.
That's what I got to do is just go do it.
Just go do it. You got points, I mean, too, right?
You know, it's the same thing as doing anything out West, right? And just picking a spot and
it is, but it isn't. It's different. It's I'm sure it's the same type of feeling that somebody coming from the Midwest or the East to hunt elk has.
Do you feel that it would be that overwhelming?
I don't feel it would be that overwhelming.
I do.
Really?
I don't know if it would be that overwhelming because there's so much that goes into like an elk hunt. It's getting the thing out and figuring out how to call and like everything that goes. So I wouldn't say it's as overwhelming, but it is overwhelming.
But I look at it as it's much smaller areas. So, you know, I look at an elk hunt, for example, or you get a tag for a unit and you might have, let's just say 80,000 acres to hunt. How do I pick my 1,000 that I want to hunt or 10,000 that I want to hunt, where at least like on the whitetail side, if you're hunting a unit, there might only be, let's say 5,000 public in the entire unit. And now you can really start to kind of narrow it down more, I guess, is where I looked at it.
Where I get overwhelmed thinking about like going to do a public land, you know, maybe Iowa hunt or something like that is okay. Yeah. It's smaller. Right. If I have to put up a little tree stand here.
Right. Yeah.
And then
how do I know
like, there's a funnel coming in, deer traveling. All of a sudden the deer is 100 yards away. And I'm like, shoot, that was my other tree stand spot. The wind would have been perfect in both ways, but I picked the wrong one for this situation. Well, so and then I modify the next day and the deer goes over here. We're elk hunting or deer hunting, spot and stock. I can kind of modify on the go or do something different the next day and like smooth it over a little bit.
I totally get that. It's funny. The place that I killed that buck in Iowa, first place I picked, I was just like, I picked it on a map. I was like, I'm going to go check this place out first thing when I got there. Mm-hmm. Set up a tree stand, basically kind of had the same thing happen. I noticed that all the deer were kind of coming 60 yards from me. I never saw a shooter buck that day, right? But like most of the deer were kind of crossing 60 yards. And then I ended up jumping. I just kept jumping around this like chunk of public because I was like, I want to explore over here. I want to explore over here.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing the buck that I want to kill because I told myself going to that hunt, I wanted to shoot 160 plus inch deer. That was my goal, which I think is pretty lofty goals for obviously public and everything else.
I'd say.
But I was like, I want to shoot 160 inch deer with my bow. And ended up, I hunted for 5 straight days and then I had to be in Missouri for a work trip. So I left. Went and hunted down there for a couple of days. And I was like, I'm going to hit it on my way back because I drove. And I was like, got to pass right back through. So I was like, I got 2 more days. So the next day I went back in there and I went to the first place that I hunted and I moved my stand 50 yards further, closer to where I saw. And literally an hour later, I had this buck like walk the exact same trail and he comes right to me. It's just,
yeah, it's
maybe
similar.
It's a little bit of dumb luck, but it's also like I made, you know, like I made that conscious decision that I don't need to be in the same place that I was before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Were you just truck camping?
For the Iowa thing, it was like I could get a hotel for $55 a night. I brought everything for truck camping and then ended up just saying like,
for $50, I'll just stay
for $55, right? Like I'm under $500 for the whole week and everything else. I like taking a shower every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
if
I
can. Hot meal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've slept in my truck enough times by the end of turkey season and bear season to kind of get me through. And hell, I'd already elk hunted the year. You know what I mean? Like
I never said what your favorite species is.
Say elk.
No, we don't need another one of those people on the side.
Say elk.
I will say that I moved out west because of elk hunting. Is the whole reason I moved out west. When I came out here in 2010 or like went to Wyoming 2010 and like fell in love with it, I told myself I have to have an elk tag in my pocket for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So as soon as I got out of the military, I moved out west.
Gotcha.
Since then, ask me, depending on the month, is depending on what species is my favorite.
That's a good answer.
Ooh, that is, I like that.
Is this public land Iowa whitetail? Would you consider that kind of the creme de la creme? Like as far as your best accomplishment, would you say? As
no,
far
as, really? Definitely my moose hunt from a few years back. Actually, gotcha. I killed my moose like a week after you killed yours.
Yeah,
it was right?
Same year.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a, you know, DIY, like we took a transporter in by boat, got dropped off, went for 10, 11 days, right? Mm-hmm. And I literally killed my bull in the last 45 minutes of that hunt.
Oh, wow.
So it was like all that anticipation. You think the hunt's over. I mean, the hunt was literally over. We're packing camp and I hear a grunt and 1,400 yards away, like here comes this bull.
That's
awesome.
You know,
call him into 400, shoot him. And as soon as I shoot him, like you can hear the boat coming to pick us up, which is just wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like absolutely wild. So I would say that's still, you know, for me, that was kind of where I was at. And it was like, that's what I felt was my next stepping stone along my ladder.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I want to go back so bad. Like I look forward to my next time of moose hunting. It's just different.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
How many years ago has that been? Two?
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Usually takes some years.
Year and a half, I guess. Yeah.
Takes a year or so, I think, for a moose hunt to kind of go past before you start thinking, maybe I'd want to do that again. At least me. I was like, that was a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, I called mine to the edge of the river.
Oh, gotcha.
And shot him and dropped him in his tracks, and his nose literally, was in the river. So then the boat guy just comes up, and, we couldn't even get to him because he was across this, big creek. Like where I'd shot him on the edge. So the boat guy drove right past him, didn't even notice that he was laying on the bank as he drove past him. And he comes up there and we're freaking out thinking that, you know, he's going to have to hurry up. And I was we're going to have to tell him to turn around and come pick us up tomorrow. And he's like, oh no. He's like, it's not a big deal. I'll just take you over there. We load all our stuff up, go over. He drops us off on the shore and literally goes fishing and panning for gold for the next 4.5 hours.
Well, you took
and we
care
just
of him.
Had to literally skin and lift and put over into the boat. So
that worked perfect.
The best pack out for a moose that you could ever ask for.
Yeah, it's a little different between my experience.
Just a little.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you got plans this year already? Making plans?
Might have a few things in the works.
Anything really you're really excited about?
Might have a few things in the works.
Okay, fair enough. Ooh, he's not
saying. You're going to just under, just getting you kind of excited.
He's going sheep hunting.
Hey, everyone can dream to do that.
I think I'm going to Alaska 3 times.
Well, that's pretty good.
So, and for all species that I haven't killed before.
Oh, right on.
So that's even more exciting.
Yeah.
So.
That is cool. It's always fun this time of year to start making plans and putting the pieces together.
Yeah, I'm super stoked. Obviously, we're right in the middle of application season, and I'm trying to figure out where I can actually apply that fit into my predetermined schedule because of work, you know, and what makes sense. So
for sure.
Yeah, that's where it gets kind of tricky, trying to plan out when you already have something a little bit in the works, but then you want to do something else as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's I already have 6 hunts planned. So it's if I go and I start drawing stuff, it's it's either one, I'm only home for 2 or 3 days at a time, or, you know, I don't have a wife and kids when I get home, you know, type of thing. So I try to be somewhat cognizant, and, you know, my boss still wants me to work here. He's like, you can't just hunt all the time. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I mean, I know
bosses want that.
Yeah.
They want your butt in the seats from time to time.
How about you guys? You guys got some things in the works?
I bought an elk tag, in Idaho.
Yeah.
That wasn't exactly the one I wanted, but I got one. So that's something. Yeah. And then, the rest of them, just trying to fill in and see what we can do. We're talking internally about a little adventure. And if that really happens, that'll be pretty cool. That'll be like one of those boxes checked off of I dreamed about that for a long time. So
yeah, it'd be really, really cool if we make that happen.
Yeah.
And if it does, it's going to happen quick here.
Yeah, it's a spring hunt, so it'll have to be fast and furious.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, nice. Better hit the treadmill.
You always stay ready, Trail.
I don't know about that. But yeah, it should be good. Yeah, I mean, we're still so early.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Wyoming closes the 31st, so there's, a week, 2 weeks, I guess, to kind of think about that. And you got Arizona right on the tail end of that.
Right.
I'll probably try to draw an elk tag in Arizona, I think, so... Yeah.
I have points too for there. I could
try. Brady's always lurking.
I'm lurking on the elk thing always. You never know.
The thing about Brady is even if he does have plans, he won't tell you. So you'll find out about it next year.
When he posts something down on social.
You'll have
I talk to Brady at least once a month, maybe once every other month. And he doesn't tell me about anything.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden he posts and it's like, dude, I asked you what you were doing. And you didn't. And you're like, I'm just working.
Doing Brady Miller things.
Just working.
I may or may not have a couple deer tags already for this year. Don't know if I'm going to keep them, but I got a couple deer tags already.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Charlie didn't even know.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Anything else, planning. Brady, you wanted to ask Dale?
No. That's always catching up, talking shop, talking some bullets.
Yeah.
Could geek out of the subject forever.
You liking the new job?
I do. I love it.
You're liking it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun, right? Like, because... with my previous experience of doing a lot of different things and working in the space, right? I know a lot of contacts. So now that I can be on the flip side, right? I can go talk to those people and say, hey, this is why you need to talk about us. You need anything to shoot, happy to help out. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Anything you want to plug on the Big Hunt Guys podcast?
I mean, obviously you can go check out sierrabullets.com or barnesbullets.com and get anything you need. I mean, we're in a lot of different stores, a lot of different, Cabela's and Shields and Sportsman's, like you were saying, right? So you can go pick it up pretty easily.
You cover both sides from lead and copper. So
right.
Obviously we talked a lot about copper.
We definitely did.
Talked about all the time, but.
But, I would say just keep an eye out on our social for these new items coming soon. I think that people will be pretty stoked about it. And
you sure you don't want to just tell us right now?
Shoot, did you guys see that? Did you?
They heard that, right?
Oh, they got it. Yeah, they got it. Everybody got it. That's probably a good spot to cut, huh?
God.
So now you guys know. Well, thanks for coming. That was fun.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Fun to catch up.